Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
But don't
good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Chaudel, and I'm here with co-host, producer, and dear friend, Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. I think spring has finally arrived.
It's sprung, right?
It's crazy because it goes from winter to spring, like, quickly.
I know. I think we all remember it differently, though. You know, I remember saying, oh, there's no spring anymore. It goes right to summer. But it's always been like that, you know, kind of. You know, you're coming out of March and you're praying for April and...
I don't know. It seemed like, you know, we get teased late winter that, you know, it's getting warm and it's nice. And then all of a sudden, it returns to normal. And then all of a sudden, spring is here. Everything's blooming.
Yeah, thank God, right?
You know, the holidays are over.
I finally understand why people my age go to Florida. You know, I mean, the winter thing is just in your bones. Terrible.
It's interesting because we have guests today.
Yeah.
And the holidays, in my mind, relate very much to who and what our guests
are.
And we'll get into that in a little bit.
So I want to say something, and I'm not going to mention where I was. I went to a restaurant the other night. Imagine that, right? You know, and it was a place that I had been to before. And my other half, Valerie, had never been there. Right? So we go. And it was the epitome of a restaurant that's dying. And and I don't mean that in a snotty way. It's just that we walk in, there was, I think, two tables in the entire place, seats about 200 or whatever. And I go behind the, I sat at the bar, and, you know, I like to sit at the bar.
Sure.
Because I don't never lose my waiter, and if I have an argument with her, I have somebody to talk to. It's great. It doesn't happen to us, but I hear it happens to other people. So it's a nice place to, you know, talk to other people. Anyway, so I'm sitting at the bar, and they had this very nice little Spanish girl who was tending bar. But she spoke very little English. I'm looking at a big canister where they keep the vodka with the pineapples in.
Oh, yeah.
And the vodka was down to maybe a half an inch, and the pineapples above it were beige.
Oh, wow.
It was just looking like nobody. They had a manager in the front that was about 14 years old. You know, I'm thinking,
now, what type of cuisine? You don't have to name it.
I can't know. If I say the cuisine and it's the process of elimination, somebody will figure it out. So I don't want to say. It doesn't matter. But it was just one of those things that you're looking and you're saying, oh, my God, that's so sad. It looks like it's about to go, you know. And, you know, in this climate that we're in, you know, economically, the biggest indicator to me is diners are shutting down. You know, they're dropping like flies. And, you know, you start to see these things and you know, you see it coming. I know the symptoms. You know, I've been at this 50-something years, you know. And it's just sad. I was like, you know, and we ordered like three appetizers. We got two. Not bad, you know. I mean, you know, if you hit, what, two out of three, you're in the Hall of Fame, I guess. You know, so they forgot the other appetizer. It was just a mess from the time we got there. And the shame of it was, it's a nice place. And you know.
So how does Tom Chaudel handle a missing appetizer?
Nothing. If I'm hungry, I'll say, oh, can I order a crab cake or whatever again? And if I'm not, I'll just let it go. We weren't that hungry, so we just let
And do you examine the bill to make sure that the missing appetizer wasn't there?
You know, I did not. I really didn't care all that much. I just want to get out of there and tell you the truth, you know. It was kind of depressing to be there. And we had two glasses of wine apiece, but we had two in the beginning. And one of them was a very bad representation of the grape. And the other one was fine. It was great, you know. But I'm thinking, wow, they're just not trying. It's like they've given up. It's sad to see, you know. Anyway, now on that happy note, have you been out at all?
I'm just trying to think. This week was kind of kind of quiet, although I was at a gala for the Nassau County Police Department. They're
gala's
celebrating.
like a bar mitzvah without a child, right? Or a
well, this was a business gala, so it wasn't with the there was music, but it wasn't with tuxedos
dancing
and fancy,
and all that, yeah.
Right? So the Nassau County Police Department is celebrating its 100th anniversary.
Wow.
And so the event was held at their training center, which is on the campus of Nassau Community College.
Mm-hmm.
What's really cool over there is they actually built a village. And there's a gas station, a tavern, a church that is omni-religion. So it's...
I'm not familiar with that one.
So it can be a Catholic church, it can be a Jewish synagogue, it can be a mosque.
Or something like that.
So they can move things around inside. Yeah. But it's a practice footprint for the police. They can actually have car chases.
Oh, wow.
They can have a car turned over that blocks their way. So supposedly they get to the center to do their training on a day, and they're just hanging out. They get their instructions and they have to react. So they showcase that as part of the evening. And one of the things that was really, really cool is Bola had a gas station that literally looked like a gas station. It was...
Bola, the one that has a gas station every block and a half?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they actually built a representation of a gas station.
Really?
And it was actually stocked with candy inside and everything. But it was really, really, really impressive. So the gala was all about celebrating the 100 years of the police department, and they were looking for donations. And at the end of the evening, Harry Singh, who is the owner of Bola,
yeah,
reaches into his pocket and presents a $1 million check.
That's a big one.
And I'm thinking, my God, I was just talking to him moments before he did that,
yeah,
and he didn't give me a check.
You're but not it's exactly really saving the citizens.
But it's really cool. I can't say enough about Harry. Came to the United States with $300 in his pocket.
Yeah.
Owns more than 300 gas stations, and they have their own construction department. I have a friend that has 29 Dunkin' Donuts. He actually contracts with them to do some of the build outs because, again, their construction company is mm-hmm. Ongoing business. But at any rate, it was a nice evening. The food actually was interesting because out in the training facility, they had a couple of different food trucks,
mm-hmm.
Which was enough food to stuff anybody's belly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you went inside for the sit-down dinner, which was pre-plated. It was a lobster tail and a filet mignon, which was actually pretty good. You know, most of the times I walk away pretty disappointed.
Yeah, lobster tails to me are just, I don't know, I'm not a big fan. You know, they're frozen, they're terrible most of the time. You know, the South African ones are okay, the Brazilian ones are awful, you know, and they're always tough.
Well, you're a tough critic. You know, I guess listening to what we're saying, but...
well, they have nothing to do with lobster, so...
Well, but you should know that Tom's doing at his best when he's out east with a whole lobster and taking it apart and dripping all over.
You want butter on your elbows when you're done with it, you know. And you want to be looking at the water, right? I mean, you don't want to sit in some restaurant looking at lobster. Anyway, so why don't you introduce our guest while we have him here? We'll bring him in from the green room.
Oh, you're really putting the pressure on me.
You want me to pronounce? You know, you have to understand, Stu is the worst pronunciation addict I've ever seen in my life. It's like nuts. All right, so today's guest, we have Merrill Zorn from Zorn's, and everybody knows what Zorn's is, and Catherine Honorata, who's her caddy, sidekick, and dear friend, I'm sure.
Yes.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Nice morning. Nice to have you here.
So you guys are sort of on a press tour, in a sense, celebrating your 80th anniversary over in Bethpage.
85.
Wow, that's 5 years younger than Stu.
So I've lived in the area for 20 years, and Zorn's is definitely a fixture. You moved the store a little bit. I guess you left the old location and moved like a quarter of a block away. We'd love to hear all about that story. And again, there's been other locations throughout the years in different places across mostly Nassau County, really. Nassau County, Western Suffolk. That's right.
Yeah.
But like Merrill, how did you get involved with this empire? And Catherine, what's your role in what goes on?
So, well, I started when I was 7, 8 years old. I was making pot pie tops. I was mixing the apple pie mix. And I wanted a bicycle, so I had to work to get my bicycle. It was 50 cents a day, I think, I would get.
Yeah.
And my dad would buy my bicycle, but I had to pay it off. So that's why I started. And I've been working, you know, you form people. You know, we're the reason why child labor laws are in effect today.
That's why farmers had six kids, you know, yeah. They needed the help.
Exactly. So you just worked. I mean, we just worked all my whole childhood. We worked, the whole family worked. Everybody was involved. Whole holidays, we never had holidays. We were always working. Christmas.
So when you say, you just said chicken pot pies, that, which is like a heritage dish on the menu, has Zorn's done fruit pies also in the day? Or
yes, apple pie. It was mincemeat is actually one of the ones. I don't even.
Yeah, what is that?
I'm not familiar with
it. There's no meat in it.
Mincemeat even is.
It's just a terrible name.
It's a weird name. It's weird, but I remember mixing that.
Thank God it wasn't minced fish. It would be even worse. You know?
I think it's like fruit or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's raisins and things like that.
Yeah, beets.
Apples or whatever.
Yeah.
I have to assume the crust for a chicken pot pie is different than the crust for a fruit pie.
Yes. The chicken pot pie crust is exactly the same recipe as we did back then. And we still hand roll our own dough and we still
stamp it out.
Yeah. We tried to cut corners. It just doesn't work. We've tried other stuff to get it, you know, pre-made. It's if you taste them side by side, completely different. We just can't change making them.
Yeah, there's some things that, you know, like convenience foods, you know, frozen foods or whatever are good at. I mean, I was talking to a baker the other day and they buy their crescent rolls, you know, and they buy their, what's the other one, that little, what's the name of that damn thing? It's like a pastry, but it's round and croissant.
A croissant.
You know, because they don't have a sheeter, you know, you need a sheeter that's half a football field long and you got to dough and fold and back and forth, you know. So he says, you know, it's just easier. He says 90% of the bakeries on Long Island are buying them now, you know what I mean, frozen because it's a... But there's, like you say, there's some things that you can't, you know, replace, and you got to keep it the same way.
We actually did get someone in, but it wasn't the same. Yeah.
It's not. There's a soulfulness in things that you make, especially something that's been around for, well, you said 85 years now,
85
right?
85 years. Yeah, we're retail 85 years. We've been around probably. We started like late 20s.
That's when Stu was born. Stu was born in the late 20s.
There you go.
Same thing.
Wait, so the original Zorn's was on the southwest corner of 135 and Hempstead Turnpike, essentially. And I'm led to believe that it was a farm that you raised chickens and turkeys in the day.
It was before the 135 and before the hospital. It was 10 acres. And it was turkeys we raised.
So was 135 just a road?
It was
or?
Just a kind of a dirt road, yeah.
Mm.
And my grandfather started, he just sold wholesale to Brooklyn, Queens. That's how it started. And then he started selling retail, just turkeys, and it was just November and December. That was it for the year. And then he would grow turkeys and sell them wholesale. But he started... And that was in 1940, 1939, 1940. And after, because he said, I'm going to sell retail on Long Island. Anybody who at that time said, you can't sell retail on Long Island. It's just, you can't do that. It's only, you know, we're here, it's potato farms. And
You
can't do it. So he said, he put a 5x8 piece of plywood sign on Hempstead Turnpike, said, buy your turkeys here. And that's when he started selling retail, and it was just turkeys, and then he started with chickens. And then very soon after, 41, 42, he started selling butter, eggs. Eggs is how he started. That's how his whole thing started, with incubating eggs. That was his whole, you know, growing eggs. And he started with butter, bread, you know, Entenmann's. It's even, you could see it on the old shelves.
Yeah.
Things like that. Then he started cooking. I guess it was in 1946, started cooking rotisserie chickens. And that just wasn't heard of, that you wouldn't get, you know, food that was already prepared.
Right.
And so that was a completely innovative thing to do, where there was no such thing.
Huh.
And there's an ad actually from Newsday that says the first of its kind, a supermarket on Long Island.
Oh, nice.
First of its kind. There was no such
thing. So the cooked chicken, was it always available in a bucket?
Well, I started with rotisserie chicken. And it was, you know, in a tin tray. And then he started with the buckets. Yes, very soon on. He started with Southern fried chicken. But we had potato salad, macaroni salad, coleslaw. Yeah, yeah, those are all now today still those same recipes. Nothing's changed.
Is that grandma? Grandma's recipe?
Yeah, my grandmother and my grandfather.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure other family members, you know, I'm sure that it was a whole
You're naming the whole menu from my mother's Passover feast.
Yeah.
I had to go to Zorn's to get the fresh killed turkey. I needed the gravy. I needed the matzo balls. What else? Oh, the rendered chicken fat?
Yes.
Where else do you go for rendered chicken fat?
Yeah, we have that all the time.
I have to go back to turkeys for a second, and this is an urban myth that I was told years ago, and you can either confirm it or dispute it, but I heard that turkeys are so stupid that they can look up in the rain and drown.
You know what's really funny? My grandfather and my grandfather's brother, my Uncle August, they were partners for a while. And my Uncle August would say that they're so stupid that they would do exactly what you said. They'd you know, walk off a bridge. And my grandfather would say, they're not stupid. They're just curious. Uh-huh. They just want to look around. They just want to see. They're not stupid. I know they're crazy friendly. They're very, very social.
Well, you can be curious, look around, and not drown. You know what I mean? You got to be smart enough to just stop looking after your lungs fill up or whatever.
Yeah, you're right.
You smoked? I used to smoke. No, forget it.
So the original property was about what size?
The original property is 10 acres.
10 acres. And then I guess when you stop raising the chickens and turkeys, and the original store was, how big was that footprint?
It started as a farm, and then that was generation one. We have those pictures. That's from the 20s, 30s. And then they built out, so you can actually still see the farm, and then they built out to the retail store, and that was in the 40s. But we still had, the 135 wasn't there yet. The 135 went in 1958, and the reason why I know that is because I have the drawing of Town of Oyster Bay, a letter to my grandfather saying,
oh. Take part of the property away?
It did. It took some chicken pens out. Yeah, it took a lot of the property. He had to sell his property to make the 135. And then I'm looking back in the archives because we're having an 85th anniversary book, and I'm pulling out all kinds of things from years ago. And you see when my grandfather sold the property to the people who bought the hospital, because the town of Oyster Bay was, which is, it said town of Oyster Bay, but I thought that was a state road, but I might be wrong. The people who bought the property to build the hospital.
Was real estate ever a profit center for the family as you sold it off? Or I stumped you.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know if they weren't into real estate. It was just buying farms and running the farms and, you know, selling them. I mean, I guess they sold them back. But there was different family members also that owned the Hop Hog Country Club, which is now the Stonebridge Country Club.
Yeah.
That was a farm. It was 360 acres.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
No, 168. No, it was 360 acres. 360 acres, I think.
Interesting.
You know, I think kids today have no idea. I mean, the history of Long Island was farms. I mean, I remember when my family moved to Carl Place in 1958, and there was a dairy farm, One Oak Dairy, right down on the corner of Old Country Road and Carl Road, you know, where I guess Sam Ash is and Shiro of Japan. I guess now we're, what's that big wine shop? Total Wine?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just across the street. So we used to go down as kids and throw rocks at the cows to try and get their attention, you know what I mean? Small ones, not big ones, but yeah, cows running around Old Country Road. It's like hard to believe now, you know?
Yeah.
So Catherine's sitting there so calm and
collected. Yeah, stop interrupting Catherine, will you?
you know, like so happy that we're not involving her. Yeah. But
I appreciate that.
I got to ask you, what's your role in the Zorn family?
I had started Zorn's about 28 years ago. I just found a little ad in the paper looking for a bookkeeper.
Uh-huh.
I had just graduated with my accounting degree, and I figured I was just going to go get a little job before I started having children and my family, and I met Merrill that day, and she hired me right away. I had two children, and I left temporarily, but I was always involved. I always worked the month of November. I would always cover for vacations. Merrill at the time was a dancer, and she used to travel all over the place. So when
really?
She would go on competitions, I would cover for her, for the other girls in the office. So I always kind of kept my foot in the door. But me and Merrill had like this special bond, I think, right away. And we became best friends. And so when my daughter started kindergarten, she's like, I need you to come back. And I was like, okay. I hesitated a little while because I didn't want to disappoint. you know, when you're trying to raise a family and working. I didn't want to disappoint her. And she's like, just Monday and Wednesdays, 9 to 11. That's all I need, Joe. And that lasted about 2 weeks. And then I've been in since. So, yeah, it's been 28 years now.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, well, she first, in her interview, what she had said to me, and this is the God's honest truth, she said, okay, stop interviewing. I want this job.
I did.
She really said that. Okay, no more. Stop interviewing.
Is it true that she said she wanted Tuesdays off?
So I want to get to that dancing thing. Did you learn how to dance avoiding the turkey droppings in the field? Yeah. Or is that how you, the two-step?
She's a great dancer.
Competitive ballroom. My grandparents were ballroom dancers. My mother and father were ballroom dancers.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. One time I had a girlfriend who was trying to get me to go to Arthur Murray's to do ballroom dancing. That's and right. I said I'd rather stick a fork in my eye than to do that. It's just not my thing. I'm not coordinating.
Isn't there a Fred Astaire dance studio like across the road from you guys?
I think it's down
a little
the
bit.
Ways.
Yeah. So Meryl, you know, everything you do, there's two sides of the restaurant. There's the marketing and, you know, your ideas for the future. And there's just, you know, keeping the food, controlling the food and employees and all that. Did you have any schooling for any of this, or was it all just learn as you go?
Both. A lot of it's learn as you go, because you don't really learn too much in school.
No,
you
no.
know, you don't really. It's always life experiences. And when my dad died, I always knew the front of the house. I knew I did the marketing with Catherine also. I always knew the retail, the catering. I took all the big catered orders. The office manager, I was the everything but back of the house. I just didn't know the back of the house. But I had my family, my dad. And when my dad died, I ended up having to go to the back of the house and learn that. So
can you cook?
I didn't know. I don't do any of the recipes, so that's why I don't know the systems, the processes that I know. We have our recipe book, but I just compiled all that together. I didn't like the system how it was at all. It just didn't make sense. Just this is what I do. I just picked it up. I pulled it all apart. Spoke to every single person. All the department heads, changed how we did everything, the ordering, what they do. Now, it was always the manager that did the ordering. Now, each department does their own ordering. They're responsible for what, because we have a huge order. Like, everything is made from scratch, so it's celery and carrots. It's every little thing, spice, you know, everything you could imagine. And I changed the whole thing around. So I learned the back of the house kind of under fire. And it was interesting, but that's how I learned it myself. I'm only common sense. That's all I had, really. That's how I come to the table with common sense.
The Zorn experience is so pleasant. I can't begin to tell you. Again, I was just there recently for the holiday, and there you have one guy behind the counter, very tall, but he's incredible. You know, people have questions. What does this taste like? Hey, take a spoon. No, whatever. He's not upselling, but because he's so good at what he does, he's upselling. You know, they get a bucket of chicken, and I know you get a couple of side dishes with it, and they go, you know, what's that stuff? And the mashed cauliflower. I don't know who came up with that, but that's like, you're the only guys that do it. It's incredible. When I ordered my turkey, I ordered it over the phone, and somebody called me back because they wanted to make sure that the date that they took down was right, because I ordered like on a Monday for a Wednesday or something. You know, the holiday wasn't until the weekend. I mean, again, it's just done so well that it's and who doesn't look for the penny saver or whatever for your coupon?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
again, you know, 85 years of trial and error. You know, you learn something over 85 years.
And there's so much more to learn always. Oh, yeah. Always. You know, everything changes.
Getting back to the back of the house, I'm interested in that, you know, I've been in situations where the manager wanted to do the ordering. And I've found the only reason for the manager to do the ordering for all those departments is because there's some kind of shenanigans going on between the manager and the purveyors, you know, kickbacks or whatever. How would a manager know how much flour you need? How would a manager know how many carrots you want? How many, you know, it's just crazy, right? So, you know, I've owned restaurants my whole life now. And you know, I always let, even in my places, the department tell, you know, the purveyor what they need. I mean, at some point I had, you know, seven restaurants. I didn't know what the pastry chef over here needed or what over there. And I hear these arguments about let's all just have one, you know, kind of, you know, 6-7 restaurants at the same time. They wanted, like, you know, if we combine all our orders into one, we're going to get a better deal. And it's just ridiculous because nobody knows what's going on. And I'm sure you've run into the problem where the managers are, you know, doing things that aren't exactly above board, you know. And I think that, you know, one of the reasons, and I kind of put Zorn's in the same category as restaurants, but one of the reasons that there's such a failure rate is that, you know, people who are in it really don't know. You know, you came up organically through the whole process and, you know, the farming and as a kid, so it's in your DNA, you know, to know what's going on. But so many people come in and they buy these, you know, food service places or you know, a very, like a big kind of country store, a deli or a restaurant, you know, because they're a lawyer and they think it's easy and I have some money and then boom, all of a sudden, you know, everything's going out the back door. The manager's stealing, you know, there's no cash left. What's going on, you know? So talk about that a little bit. How did you, you know, kind of get the, maybe Catherine had something to do with that or, you know, getting a handle on what was going on?
So what I ended up doing is I had each department do the ordering. We always had, we had a fantastic manager, Frank. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. he had retired. But he would come in. I know, I remember getting inventory. We would need inventory of what we had. But what they do now is we have what they want on an order sheet. Each department has what they need. And they're all different vendors. So they've got all the vendors. They take inventory of what they have. We have a par. They take their inventory, what they have, and then what they need.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always a second pair of eyes looking at it,
right.
You know, and then there's one person it goes to in the office, and then they place the order with the vendor.
Call.
So they
go,
we take each sheet of paper because there's the same, some have the same vendors, but they're all each by department.
Sure, yeah.
And so there's always a check and balance, and there was always something. It's always good to say, wait a minute, you know, it's Jewish holidays, you know, we need potato pancakes, or we need to need extra matzo ball mix, and we'll always like watch that, you know, for the holiday time. But that's how we keep an eye on it. So it's going through, you know, the department head,
sure.
It's going through someone else, and then I always see it. Catherine always sees it. A lot of time, I had used to take place the order myself, and then it went to Catherine, and then it went to now.
But we were kind of forced into that position when her dad got sick, and then later passed away. A lot of stuff was brought to our attention. We were just in the back office doing payroll, doing accounts payable, accounts receivable.
Minding
the
my
back
own
stuff.
Business.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when her father got sick, it was brought to our attention. A lot of shenanigans going on in the back of the house. And that's where we were kind of forced into taking over, taking inventory, seeing what was really going on, and mainstreaming everything. And I think if Merrill hadn't taken over at that point, I don't think Zorn's would be here today.
Wow.
You know, it's really funny that, you know, you get these people and character issues, you know, stealing is a character issue. And I remember catching somebody and saying, you know, what were you thinking? I mean, you know, you're giving up a, you know, $100,000 a year job for $2,000 or whatever. And I said, the other thing is, if you were that smart, I'd be working for you. What do you think? At some point, I'm not going to find out. I mean, you know, yeah, you'll get away with it for a while, but at some point I'll go, wait a minute, you know, and find out, you know.
Well, it went on in the background for a long, long time before, like I said, she was forced into seeing what was going on when her dad passed away and she knew she had to take over what was going on.
Yeah, nothing I could do. I had to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tell people now that I hire people that steal enough to make a living and not enough to put me out. You know, because I don't want to be paying.
Since then, one or both of us are always there.
Yeah.
Always there, one or both of us.
We are very hands-on.
Yeah, you need to be. You need to be. You know,
we're in everything all the time.
And even if they're not, you know, there's no illegality going on stealing or whatever. I mean, people always take the path of least resistance unless they're, you know, forced into the, you know, how many times, you know, people taking a shortcut with a recipe or something, oh, I got a better way. I don't have to saute the carrots. I can just throw them in. You know, whatever. You know, it's just not the same if you're not watching.
No, we're always watching, definitely. And they know we eat our food all the time.
Yeah.
And if there's something not right, you know, Catherine and myself would be like, what's going on? You know, it's, yeah.
You can tell right away. I mean, I'll give you a great example. I was up in Boston 2 years ago, whatever it was, and there's a chef up there. His name is Ken Oringer, and he's got a bunch of restaurants, and they're all fabulous, right? So, whenever I go to Boston, I basically go there for 3 days to just eat five appetizers in six restaurants every night. You know, I just eat myself stupid. Just looking for inspiration and having fun, right? So I'm going to his restaurants and I'm saying, hey, you know, it's not quite the same. He's got five now and I don't know, maybe he's stretched out and he's not paying attention or whatever. And I'm bitching and moaning about this on the way home on the ferry, right? So I stop at one of my places out east, and I sit there, and I had one of the most mediocre meals I ever had in my life. I'm like, oh, my God, it's happened to me. You know what I mean? I'm screaming about him. Maybe I should start paying attention, you know? So I went in the kitchen, threw a tantrum, and everything straightened out, you know? But it's funny. If you're not watching, it just they just take the shortest possible way to get it done. And you know, it just is human nature, you know? It's, they have to be watched. I mean, you have people. I think I read one time that less than 10% of people own their own businesses. And that's not a coincidence. You know, some people need to work for the government and being taken care of, and some people are industrious and go on their own. But those people, the ones that are, you know, looking to be babysat, need to be babysat. They need to be, you know, told what to do and when to come in and, you know, when to go home and all that stuff. So, you know, I admire your, you know, your longevity. I mean, 85 years is, you know, I don't know if it's the same for your business, but you know, my business, we age in dog years. You know, every year is 7 years, 8 years, you know. It's like, hey, look at me. I mean, I'm 27 years old. Look what I look like, you know. It's, it'll kill you, you know. But it's amazing. Yeah. You've had an amazing run. It's nothing but great.
So when you talk about 85 years, I'm just curious about the evolution of the menu and the items that you make available. I mean, like, when did you decide you were going to be the mecca for matzo balls? When all of a sudden...
Alliteration. Mecca for matzo balls. One more M and you would have been Shakespeare.
Wow. And then, you know, like, I'm sure you weren't doing raps 30 years ago. When do you realize that raps are a thing and have them in the case?
You know, Frank, our manager, that he was there for 40, 50 years. He was the best. He's my second father. He was a lot of, you know, added a lot of things like the wraps and things like that. I think he's the one who thought of the mashed cauliflower as
he
well.
He did. In yeah. the beginning of the 2000s, when Atkins was popular. Developer. That's what the low-carb mashed cauliflower.
Yeah, thing. But, yeah, I guess it just, you know, you see they come in like, oh, God, what would it be? Wings. We started doing wings before anybody else. But, I mean, now they're really, you know, popular. We didn't do wings in the very beginning.
You use a special recipe for the breading for like your chicken fingers. What is it? I draw a blank at the moment.
I can't tell you what it is.
No, but it's like corn flakes or something.
No, it's you're talking about it used to be sesame chicken, but the chicken
that's what
tenders
I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking about.
Is different from the southern fry, yes.
And that was just something that somebody in their own kitchen came back.
Yeah, boneless chicken. Yeah, probably Frank.
They're so
Frank
good.
Was so innovative. My grandfather thought of everything. My dad was like kind of run the business, but my dad and Frank were really close because they kind of started together. And when my dad was still young, Frank is younger than my dad, but they were always together. But Frank was the one with the ideas. After my grandfather, after all the staples were there, then after that.
You know, and who created the famous barbecue sauce that you have?
That was my dad and my mom. My dad's a pilot. And he would fly all over the place, and he would go to these what are they called? The conventions. It's a big barbecues. What are those called?
Oh, the yeah, I know what you mean.
In down south.
Mm-hmm.
Barbecue.
There's
think
a word
of it.
For it.
Yeah, yeah.
So he went to there, and then my mom was so beautiful. This man took a liking to my mom, and my mom was like, "What is that barbecue sauce?" And because I personally don't, but of course I wasn't born yet. But that smoked Tex that everybody has, that barbecue flavor. That's not ours doesn't taste like that at all, but that's where it started. That's where the barbecue sauce started, and then the ribs came after that, of course.
Does yours have like a vinegar or something? It has
it's
a tang.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the smoky. It has no smoke in it. I mean, it has a little bit of smoke, but it's not.
Yeah, liquid smoke's a bad idea anyway.
I don't like it. I just don't. No. I don't know why. A lot of people love it. I just don't.
I mean, you need to burn wood. If you're going to burn wood, fine. You know,
yeah, but, exactly.
You know, the liquid stuff, it's yellow. I
love that you usually have like a daily special or whatever. And then the coolest thing, because everybody wants to save a buck, you might have something that was the special yesterday, and then it's in the case for a dollar off the next day. And what's wrong with an extra dollar in your pocket?
Listen to you. You're one of those guys that... Are you one of those guys that get the like the green dot sushi, you know, like 6 days after it's made for $1.50?
No, we take our food. We take the food from the day before, and we call it a reheat special. So it's 25% off that, and it's always random because we never know. The rest goes to Island Harvest.
And then the stuffed chicken breast. I think that's what it is. That's like the most incredible thing. I don't know what's inside it, but it's great
stuffing. It's good. That's good stuff. And that's the other thing we do, speaking of sausage stuffing, is our soup is real It's real stock. Mm-hmm. Again, we're so not cost effective. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. We're just, if you ever saw us in the back, you'd say, what are you people doing?
Yeah.
But they will take chicken. We buy fresh chicken, necks and backs and celery, carrots, onions, and we boil it for 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of it goes in the, you know, goes to, you know,
yeah,
recycled,
because if you buy
and we have that.
You buy a
stock.
Quart of your chicken soup. It's got
it's
noodles. It's got celery. It's got carrots.
No, the real stock thing is the important
chunks
part
of meat.
You know, people put a bouillon and a little water, and you just call it a day.
Yeah,
I mean, but, that's probably what we just don't, and that's in the stuffing,
the gravy,
the pot pies, the gravy.
There's no substitute.
There's
you know?
Every there's no, and it's
none.
Real. You can tell there's no MSG.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's actually you know seasoning. It's like grandma's food. Again, not cost effective.
I'll give
nothing
you a tip:
you
chicken feet.
Chicken feet?
No, chicken feet makes the best stock, believe it or not.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. I still make demi from scratch, which, you know, we start with bones and, you know, I'll take 36 gallons of stock and reduce it down to a quart and a half, you know.
Wow.
I mean, it takes 2 days, you know, but the flavor is incomparable. You can't get that from a cube.
Right, you're right.
You can't get that
right.
from a you're jar, right. you know.
And it's just, yeah, I love
so good for you, too.
Yeah.
Do you guys get involved with duck and goose? And
yes, not goose. We have duck. We always have duck.
It's a shame because if you went to Eisenhower Park, you'd be in the goose business in a hurry. You know? You'd be doing him a favor, too, by the way.
We've never cooked goose. I've seen it probably in the 50s.
Yeah.
And then I don't think after that.
No, nobody has the Christmas goose anymore.
No.
They have the Christmas reservation now. So, ducks, I mean, you know, obviously you're aware of what happened with Crescent Farms. You know, they had that disease out there, lost all those ducks. I've been dealing with them for, you know, 35 years or whatever it is. And they were the last ones on Long Island. Jurgelwitz is gone now, you know.
Jurgelwitz, yeah, that's
yeah, right. They're in Pennsylvania now or something.
Yep.
Still, yeah. But where are you getting them from now, the ducks?
I thought it was still Jurgelwitz.
I thought it was Jurgelwitz.
Oh, it's got to be Jurgelwitz, yeah. I never used them. I mean, I used them when they were out here once in a while. I knew Tom pretty well. But, yeah, with Crescent Farm, I mean, I think they got some babies or eggs or something that they're kind of working with, but they're saying it's going to be 3 or 4 years before they get it back. You know, we've had a lot of success with his duck wings. I sell a lot of duck wings.
That was a great item on your menu.
Oh yeah, no, the drumstick. There's a lot of meat on it.
Oh, duck legs.
No. The wings. There's that drumstick part, and then this part is you know the little pointy thing. You know, they throw that out, but it's just like a chicken wing. They have the same, you know, the one with the two bones and the one with the one bone. We take the one bone one. And I basically marinate them in a lot of herbs and spices, mostly allspice, and then I slow cook them for about, I would say, 4 or 5 hours in duck fat at about 200 degrees, and then we fry them and we do this kind of an Asian treatment with
that
them.
That was always a great offering on your menu. It would come in an elongated,
so I can't
plate.
Tell you, I sell tons of them. I mean, tons of them. They're much more interesting than chicken wings, actually. Different flavor, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We're trying to get fried turkey wings off, you know, we can't get it.
You know, turkey's an odd thing. I mean, you know, most people eat it once a year. It's like amazing
but
to me, you know.
It's so good.
It is. It's great. It's good for you, whatever. And you can sell turkey on a sandwich, I guess, you know, a club sandwich or whatever.
We're working on a fried turkey breast right now.
Oh, yeah.
And also a brisket.
Yeah.
We're working on brisket.
Brisket, really?
Yes. We're working on brisket.
We just can't get a good brisket.
No.
Can't get it. Can't find it. It's too fatty. We're going to get it for the last Jewish holiday. And
yeah, you got to trim them out.
Yeah, even, but it was,
just the inside was not appealing.
It wasn't good.
Wow.
It has to be. Like,
we are working on it.
So when you talk about brisket and then you're doing the chickens, my mom sends me out to get gravy for the holidays, and not all restaurants do a turkey gravy. They use the same gravy for meat and for brisket and for turkey. And my mother's very particular, so thank goodness you have that. And when you talk about turkey, the fact that you can get it all year round at Zorn's is incredible. Because we were talking last week about, you know, you go to get a corned beef in the supermarket after St. Patrick's Day, they're very scarce.
Well, the only
and even hams.
Yeah, the only people that sell corned beef after Paddy's Day is Ben's.
That's
true. I mean, who eats it? I have a friend who has a deli, like a country store out east, and they're very busy. They do $3-4 million a year. It's crazy, you know. But he doesn't even order it anymore because nobody eats corned beef unless you're in a Jewish deli, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, there's you know, to get fresh turkey every day of the year except Tuesdays. you know, it's so different than the sliced deli counter, you know,
processed
turkey. So again, that's why when you get a Caesar wrap, or whatever over by you, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is. It's neat that we have turkey. When people get upset when we don't, because we have to roast the turkey, and if we run out, it's like if they want real sliced turkey. Because, no one has that.
A lot of people come in for fresh sliced turkey.
Yeah,
We don't have it. Yeah. We don't have it, and they get upset with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they're in the oven, or we'll have it fresh tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, accountants have their week in the end of April, and, you know, we have Mother's Day. I guess you get Thanksgiving's your sweaty week, right?
Yes, the fourth quarter is busy.
I'm sure, yeah.
Or a lot of holidays, too.
Yeah. But it's not the gear up. Mm.
I mean, you still sell as many turkeys as you used to, or is it more chicken?
No, not at all. Really. The turkeys, we used to have corporate gift box turkeys, and then 2 years ago with the bird flu and COVID and all that, just it was a mess. So we don't do a lot of turkeys anymore.
Yeah.
So it's been a while, and I was smoking something, but I can remember, I think around 20 years ago, you brought something to the radio station, and it was a tofu turkey or something. Did you ever do that?
No.
Then it wasn't you.
You were smoking something.
No, it was a regular turkey.
It was probably.
But I remember at the radio station, you guys used to bring up sometimes for Thanksgiving, and you come up with your own cart and everything.
Yeah, the old turkey. It was old turkey dinner.
Yeah.
Dave,
now you do ribs over there, you said?
Yes.
Also, yeah. Yes. St. Louis, baby back, both?
St. Louis.
I love those.
Yeah.
They have much more meat on them. I don't know why anybody bothers with baby back ribs. They're annoying.
No, yeah, we've never done baby back.
Yeah, they're annoying to eat, actually.
Pork.
No, they got the greatest thing. You can go in and get a family combo. So you can get chicken and ribs and all the side dishes.
Yeah, I was going to say, talk to me about sides. Those are more fun than turkey. Thanksgiving.
Very laborious. our cream spinach. That we start with spinach. That's all done from scratch. The cream spinach, the sweet potatoes, obviously they're done with fresh sweet potatoes. We make those all day long and mashed sweet potatoes and garlic mashed potatoes we make all day long. That's something that, you know, sometimes we make a bunch of, like, the cheese sauce we'll make, and then we'll just add the cheeses also, three different cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
But we add the cheese to the noodles as we go. It's
not
made and then brought out.
Yeah.
Potatoes are made. We started with no skin on the sweet potatoes. Then we said, let's be a little bit more hearty, keep the skin on, and then it was too much skin. So now we take like every other,
peel the skin off. Yeah.
So now it's a little half and half.
Do you do mashed sweet potatoes at all?
Mashed sweet potatoes, that's what it is.
Oh, okay.
Mashed sweet potatoes.
A little.
Sure.
Roasted bananas.
Roasted bananas.
Yeah.
I
put roasted bananas in my mashed sweet potatoes.
Oh, that'd be like sweet.
Yeah. Coconut milk also is good.
If we change the recipe, the customers would have a fit.
Oh, I'm not saying you should. No, this is just.
Tom said this is going to work.
This is just between cooks here. You know what I mean? Yeah.
For our lunch.
I don't want to be that guy on Seinfeld that ruins somebody's bills. That guy. No, Jenny, you're a very bad man.
You guys don't do french fries, do you?
Yes. Yeah.
We have the best
steak
french fries.
A cult, yes.
Really? I've missed that.
Yeah, our french fries are really good.
Onion rings, corn nuggets.
You're probably smoking something.
What else do we have besides? I can't even think.
Turkey fried rice.
Is that a regular?
Yes.
Corn or anything like that?
You would think corn. We have really good, sweet corn.
Oh, they have
corn.
Really good corn.
But our turkey fried rice, you'd think, is an inexpensive side. All the peppers and... turkey's all hand cut.
There's nothing inexpensive anymore. It's what people have to understand.
And it's
all
labor, a lot.
You know, it's funny. I see this all the time. There's a couple of silly sites on, Long Island Restaurant Group or whatever, and they're always in there bitching and moaning about it. It's overpriced. And I'm thinking, there's no such thing as overpriced, because you don't know what the rent is, you know what the labor is, you know what the electricity is.
Payroll.
You know, I think everybody has a number in their head, whether you're buying a guitar, dinner, a car, whatever. And as soon as you exceed that number, your anxiety level starts to rise in direct proportion to how much you're spending, you know? So it's like, it's maybe it's overpriced to you, but is a Ferrari overpriced? Not if you can afford it, you know?
You're right.
You know, if you can't, yeah. But if you can, no. You know, it's the same thing, you know? And I think people just have to understand that, you know, places like yours and mine, you have to charge a certain amount of money. Otherwise, you're not going to be there long, you know? And that's the problem, you know. People go, "Oh, you're going to charge this much for corn?" Well, fine, and you buy it. You know, make it yourself.
Exactly.
I mean, really, you know.
I think our prices should be higher for what we do. You know, our sides are very inexpensive.
Yeah.
For all that goes into all of our sides, it's crazy.
You got to get to that price sensitivity curve, you know, where you raise it until you get resistance, and then you kind of lower it a little bit and stay there. You know?
We don't raise our prices that often at all, and they're still low for, you know, for what we do. And if you're getting it in, it's fair, but it's just the labor that goes into the stuff that we do. Even coleslaw, potato salad, our potato salad, we hand peel our potatoes. And I've gotten people in to say, you know, with the raw potato, there's a machine. I'm sure you've heard of it that takes the skin off, and then you boil it.
Yeah.
But then you lose all the flavor of the potato because it don't have its little house.
Yeah.
You know, the skin.
The jacket.
To keep the flavor.
Yeah, for sure.
And so it makes a whole different potato. So I'm like, I'm not doing that.
Oh, I'm falling in love with Zons because, I mean, I'm a by scratch guy anyway, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
everything.
Yeah. I mean, we do things at the restaurant that, you know, like you said, people would come in the kitchen and go, what are you doing? You could do this, you could do that, you know. I mean, now they sell all kinds of...
They're a working mom and dad's salvation. I mean, you know, on the way home, somebody remembers that they don't have dinner, and you jump in there. I mean, you always have different flavor wings in the cooler, as well as all the hot stuff that's ready to go. And
it's homemade. That's the best part. It's just really, truly homemade. Everybody says homemade. This is really, really, truly homemade.
Well, it's the essence of comfort food. I mean, you know, this is grandma's cooking, man. Yeah. And who doesn't like that, you know?
No chemicals, nothing.
So if it was your last meal, what would be your go-to food item from the store?
Chicken.
What was that?
Southern fried chicken.
Really?
It's
Are you a white meat or a dark meat girl?
Mostly dark meat, but I'll eat our white meat. I wouldn't eat white meat out anywhere, but I like our white meat because it's juicy.
For sure.
Brine marinade?
No, believe it or not, and it's pretty funny. Our chicken, we have skinless chicken, which again is more labor. We pull the skin off, but there, and then the chickens are cleaned, and the breader is breaded. There's no batter, so it's not eggs and milk. So it's a really clean chicken, adhered with water. So there's just it's chicken. It's so that's what makes it. It's so crispy, and there's no. That's why it doesn't sit in your stomach. It's not fat. It's no milk. It's just clean, and I love it. I could just live on it. I do.
Well, you have.
I do. I can't get enough of it. It's crazy.
And you said that your surplus and leftovers goes to, was it Island Harvest?
Island Harvest every week, yeah. A couple times a week, or?
I'm not sure. I think we were trying for twice a week, but they can only make it once a week.
Yeah.
They're staffing.
Yeah.
It's, I know Randy really well from Randy Dress.
She's amazing.
Yeah. We've done a lot of fundraising with them. It's just a great organization, too. I mean, there's nothing, you know, being a chef and having all these restaurants, you know, you constantly tap to do these fundraisers, and everybody tells you how much business you're going to get from it. And, yeah, okay, whatever. If that was true, I'd be standing room only on Monday at 4 o'clock. You know? But bottom line is, you know, I've limited myself to Long Island-based causes that involve children because, you know, like if I go tomorrow, if just play the Allman Brothers really loud, have a party and celebrate my life. But if... you're 9 years old, you know, I'm demanding a recount. You know, nobody wants to see sick kids and stuff or kids, you know, suffering food insufficiency or whatever. So, you know, that's, and they're probably the leading, you know, organization for that kind of thing, you know, so they do such great work.
You know. So you guys do have the retail and you do off-premise also. Here we are sitting at essentially the beginning of May coming up, and I think about the air show, which Bethpage, what used to be Bethpage Federal Credit Union, I guess, and now it's called Four Leaf. They probably serve 500 people a day at the hospitality tent that you cater. How did you guys hook up with them?
Oh, God, I love them. It's a someone who worked for them.
Linda Almond, maybe?
John Neglia, right.
Oh, okay.
And we were having, well, actually, I went to them when we've been there since inception. And I went there, and they had another caterer, and it didn't work.
And it's incredible. I mean, it doesn't go unnoticed, but, you know, you don't normally sell bagels, but you're serving breakfast, lunch, a late lunch snack.
We just do that for them.
Mm-hmm.
We do, I'll do anything for Linda and Katie. They're just the sweetest people.
I can help you out. You know, he's been threatening to get me involved in this thing for about, 15 years now? Yeah.
Yeah.
Any minute now.
Well, Tom's written a couple of books, and I think it would be pretty cool to have you out there in the hot sun signing books.
Yeah, you know what the funny thing about books is, after you've sold one to all your family and friends, you have to get rid of the other 30,000 that are in your garage. You know, I'm thinking he can help me out.
Why don't you share a quick story from one of your books with the ladies?
Well, you know, you're in retail, so I'm sure you've had some maniacs come in there, you know. So they eat in restaurants also, by the way.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I've written two books about it. The first book was about my 100 worst customers ever. And the second book, citing the fact that there was no shortage of talent, you know, is about my second 85 and 90 worst customers ever. And it's worse slash funny. I mean, people come in and do the oddest things. And I'll tell you a quick story about I had a restaurant in Montauk for a long time. And Montauk's an outdoor society. You know, it's all fishing and golf and beach and whatever. So you can have 300 reservations and nobody in your place at 7 o'clock. But by 7:30, you're fully involved and it's going. So this was the case one Sunday. It was middle of August. And this guy and his wife come in, and there's nobody in the place. And the hostess says, can I help you? He said, do you have a reservation? He goes, no. He says, but can you seat us? And he's looking at a completely empty dining room, right? And she's like studying a book. I don't know. Think of it here. And he's looking at her like she's nuts, right? So she goes, listen, I can get you seated, but you got to promise me you'll be out of here in an hour and a half. He says, yeah, no problem. Takes him to the table. I don't want to sit there. Takes him to the second table. I don't want to sit there. Finally, she goes, sir, where would you like to sit? He says, I want to sit that table over there. He goes, well, that's a table of four, you two people. He says, well, there's nobody in here. What's the difference? She goes, I know what it looks like now, but in half an hour, I'm going to have, you know. So they're arguing at the hostess stage. And I just happen to come out to check reservations. I come out of the kitchen. And I said, what's the problem? He says, well, you know, she wants to sit me at a table of two. I want to sit at a table of four. I'm a big guy. I'm not going to be comfortable there. I said, sir, you have to understand what we have here is essentially a real estate transaction. I'm selling square footage. It just happens to come with a meal. This is Montauk in the middle of the summer. You know, he goes, let me tell you something, pal. I know Tom Shortell, and when I tell him what's going on here, heads are going to roll. So now the hostess grabs her nose and leaves me with this maniac, right? She runs into the restaurant. You know, Tom, years I go back, but I'm telling you, your ass is in trouble when I tell him what's going on. So I said, all right, sit where you want. So the hostess comes back out. She goes, why didn't you say anything? I said, the guy said he knew me, he was going to call me and have me fire me. It's a lot to process. I couldn't get it down in time. You know, I'm trying to swallow. I felt like a snake with a rat in its throat trying to get it down. So that's the kind of stories that are in the book. You
did
know,
he look familiar to you?
No, yeah, I didn't.
You've never seen him?
No, I get him all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, I had another woman come in, this cool fish years ago. And my sister was helping me out. My sister was managing. She was the hostess, right? So this woman comes in and she says, you seat us four people. She goes, you have a reservation? No. She goes, well, it's probably going to be an hour or so. I goes, oh, really? Does the fact that I'm Tom's sister mean anything to you? She says that to my sister, right? So my sister goes, really? I'm a sister too. I haven't seen you at any family parties lately. You know? It's just nuts.
Wow.
Absolutely nuts.
Oh, yeah. We've got a couple of those.
Oh, we had so many. We had a guy, Sidney Felstein. He was my favorite slash worst customer ever. He ate every day he ate lunch at Cool Fish for probably 7 years. And he was the grumpiest, most incorrigible, never had a good meal. And we loved him because he was hilarious. He was like a Catskills comedian. Guy, can't make a hot soup. Big shot chef, can't make a hot soup. I used to tell him, Sidney, after 212 degrees, it disappears. I can't get anything hotter than that. So one day he didn't show up, and we're like, oh, my God, what happened to Sidney? Because he was in his 80s, you know? So we're checking the police blotter. We're calling hospitals, you know? So finally call him. And three times I call him, he doesn't pick up. I finally call him. I get him like 12:30. Sidney, you okay? Yeah, why? I said, you didn't pick up the phone. I was in the toilet. I said, well, now that you're out of the toilet, how come? What's the matter? You're not here. He says, it started to snow. I didn't want to drive. I said, you want us to pick you up? He goes, you would do that? I said, aww. Yeah, I would do that. So we went to pick him up. So every day after that, if there was a weather event, and I'm including partly cloudy, you know what I mean? He used to call up like we were a cab service. I'm ready. You know, we used to drive up. He was the best. I love that guy. He was absolutely hilarious.
See, now you're talking about pickup and delivery, so I'm curious.
Yeah,
in today's world where everybody's lazy and they don't go out and they use Uber Eats or Grubhub or whatever it is, how involved are you guys with those services?
Kicking and screaming, we did not want to be involved with them because that's not really our customer base, but we do use them, and they are a big help considering
trying to do it yourself.
They help with sales for sure.
Yeah, I had a sandwich shop for about an hour and a half in Garden City that I built for a friend, And she abandoned it, and I'm stuck with this thing, and we were doing deliveries. And I realized very quickly that getting a sandwich in a bag with a straw and a drink down a block to an office is not what I do well.
Right.
I mean, and you can't find anybody. No. You know, like, no. You can't find anybody to deliver.
No.
So what are the hours it's on? So first of all, give the address and the website and share the store hours.
Well, we are 4321 Hempstead Turnpike in Bethpage, right off the 135. Our website is zornsofbethpage.com, and our hours are 11 to 7:30 daily, and we're closed on Tuesday.
How did that come about?
Closed on Tuesday? We were closed on Tuesday years ago, probably in the 80s. Frank would know this. Every time I have a question, he knows everything.
Is that because Mondays were the holiday?
I think it was the slowest day of the week.
Yeah, yeah.
And Monday, you know, you had to clean up for the weekend, and then it was just the slowest day. So after a time, we started opening up on Tuesday. I think because business was slow and we needed to open up. And then we stayed open, but now we do a lot on Tuesdays. I wanted to close, trying to wrestle with Catherine, I've been asking her to close on Tuesday forever. She's, absolutely not. No way, no way, no way. And then finally I spoke to her and I said, listen,
we had a staffing issue too. So it was just overtime for everyone.
Yeah, it was crazy overtime.
I was just going to say, you get that.
But you're still there. You were there on a Tuesday. There's still people coming, knocking on that door, trying to get in.
Oh,
we've been
sure.
closed for year and a half now on Tuesdays?
Yeah.
It's still trying to come in.
But we have a whole cleaning crew come in on Tuesdays, any maintenance. We have our PMs. We have all, you know, that goes on a Tuesday if anything needs to be done. So it's really great. And we just started for the first time, which I thought it wasn't going to be well received, but it wasn't bad at all. We close now the
February.
The second week in February, right after Super Bowl. We had to take a whole week, and we turn tables upside down. We power wash the back.
Yeah.
Even though it's really clean back there, it's like an overload.
You need the maintenance, you know.
You know, and then maintenance and all that. So, I mean, I'm talking like
detailing. Yeah.
Deep cleaning. Yeah.
Which is really wonderful.
The marquee sign you have up on Hempstead Turnpike, is that a manual sign? It's not electronic, is it?
It's a manual sign, yeah. They asked us to do that. I said, that's just not us.
You know, we used to be open 7 days a week at Amano out east, and I remember saying to my partner, why are we doing this? I mean, we're in a resort area here, you know. He says, well, the locals really appreciate us being here. I said, okay, well, thank the three of them the next time you see them, because it's like, you know, we're not doing anything. So we wound up closing on Tuesdays, oddly enough, because Monday holidays are, you know, good for us. And our numbers never changed. Everybody just redirected, you know, till Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah.
So, and all we did was save the payroll, save the electric, whatever, you know, savings you could have.
Yeah.
So it made a lot of sense. Plus, like you say, it takes everybody out of overtime and, you know, time and a half stuff.
Yeah, well,
and
so we still have overtime, but it's not as bad.
Not as bad, yeah.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Just Thanksgiving, we're open on Tuesday.
How did you guys navigate through COVID? I mean, I guess we don't have a lot of time to talk about it, but that had to be a nightmare.
It really wasn't. We were, you know, we went to the locals and we made sure that the officials and made sure we were doing everything right and the 6 feet and the signs and cleaning. And we just had to lessen our staff because everything's still made from scratch. So instead of 6 people in catering, there were 3 or 2 and then the cooks. So we all kept ourselves separate.
Mm-hmm.
Our staff was, for some odd reason, none of us got COVID. And I don't know why. The only reason why we didn't have people is because the parents were, you know, the kids. They didn't
want
their
kids
out.
Sure, yeah,
kids
there, yeah.
But we had Easter with like 2 counter people. I don't know how that happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the line was out the door. But it really, you know, we had
curbside pickup.
Yeah, sure.
And my husband came in to do curbside pickup because he wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And
we were the only game in town.
Yeah, we were the only game in town.
Sure.
And so people who never went to Zorn's before came in and like just wanted to see what it was all about. Now mm-hmm. they're customers, and people who haven't been with us in so long said they came back like, oh, forgot all about you, you know? And so it was really worked out well for us. But we were like gangbusters 7 days a week.
Yeah, it was tough.
Well, you guys have been doing something right to be here for 85 years.
That's right. You look good for 85 years. I got to tell you. All right, we're going to close the show with Tom's 3 Keys to Life like we usually do. But before that, I'd like to thank Merrill Zorn and Catherine Honorata for coming down. You guys were great. I appreciate
you
being here.
And thank you.
I wish you another 85 at least, you know, pass it on. You know. 3 Keys to Life. Remember that? Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. See you next week.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.